Hello, everybody. Good evening. All right. Thank you. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the second general session. We have a great program in line for you this evening. But first, before I give it over to our presiding officer, how about it? Does everybody want a door prize? All right. We have an extra large t-shirt from one of our exhibitors, and they're called Dots and Dogs. Do they sell Dalmatians, maybe? I don't know. They were called, they changed their name. Okay, so Ed's shaking the bucket, and Gene's going to pick the name, and let's see who gets this one. They're stuck together. So two people could share the extra large t-shirt.
David Jackson.
Do we have a David Jackson in the room? All right. Congratulations, David Jackson. Okay. So I would like to give the microphone over to CCB's Vice President, Eugene Lozano Jr. Give him a great big hand.
Good evening. Glad that you all are here. And I've been asked, and let's do right now the very beginning announcements. And I know Peter has a few announcements to make. I'm on the mic, and
I've got a mic. Basically, my first announcement is we still have plenty of meal tickets available for tomorrow, including the membership breakfast. You have two tickets available. And the OCB luncheon and Guide Dog Users luncheon and the banquet. So please, for the if you want to go to the breakfast, see me because I'll have to scrounge some tickets. But if you need to go, if you want to go to the other luncheons and the banquet, go to the CCB registration desk, which opens up at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. And my second announcement and last announcement is, if you hadn't had a chance to check out the exhibits, please do so tomorrow. They'll be open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. They're in the Peninsula Rooms, which is just past the restaurant. So I hope to see everybody in the exhibit room tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Any other announcements? Okay, I'll make a short little announcement that don't expect to get any comments right now, but after the convention, our intention is to send out our evaluation just to get input. And one of the things we're going to be asking is your thoughts about having these speakers' vitas in the program to see if that is something you would like to see continued. We tried it as an experiment this time. Okay. Since there's no other announcements at this time, we... Yes.
I have an announcement.
Okay.
Thank you. This is Mary Beth Randall with Guide Dog Users of California, and I just want to make an announcement and introduce... We still have spaces open for our basic first aid and CPR class tomorrow morning. We will be in the club lounge on the 10th floor, directly across from the elevators. And our presenter, Peggy Rue, is here with me in the room. And so if anybody would like to come and join the class, please come. We've got some space still, so come on down. And so Peggy will be around here. And so come along. And also come buy our 50-50 raffle tickets at our table tomorrow. And we would love to have you buy those. Thanks.
Does a person have to dress in any particular way? And do you have to have a dog?
You do not have to have a dog. And dress to sit on the floor.
Okay.
Or wherever you would like to be on in the room.
Be comfortable. Right. Okay. And I'm still very interested, and we'll have to connect sometime this evening. Okay. This is the time we always do during the second general session, and that's having remembrances of the passing of CCB members since our fall, in this case, the fall 2011 conference and convention. And I was wondering if anyone would like to tell us of anyone who's passed as a member of our organization.
This is Pam Pology, the president of the San Gabriel Valley chapter. And just after our fall convention, as a matter of fact, our fall convention ended on the 30th of October. On the 31st of October, one of the CCB members who was in the Los Angeles chapter and a member at large and was quite involved in helping the San Gabriel Valley chapter, though he wasn't a member, he passed away due to undergoing back surgery and not coming out of it. So he was only 57. His birthday would have been November 3rd. But he was very instrumental in helping and sponsoring me in the Mutt Strut. So I just wanted to lift our hearts and prayers to Randy Brooks. Thank you.
Randy Brooks, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, this is Roger.
Yes.
There are three people that I'm thinking about that have varying relationships with CCB, but I think that I find them all worth remembering. They all died in January. One of them is Richard Kendall, who used to work at Telesensory with me. He was a charter member of Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. And he went off to Colorado to work for Magnesite, and then he went to Austin, Texas to work for HIMSS, for James McCarthy. Died suddenly of a heart attack. Jim Bliss, who was for most of its life, the president of Telesensory, and who CCB gave an award to in 2008, I think it was.
2004?
Oh, 2004. Humanitarian Award. Died after a long fight with multiple myeloma. That's one of those diseases that you think you've got it whipped and it comes back, and you whip it again and it comes back again, and finally you got him. And the last one I want to mention, just because she was not a CCB member, but she was a scholarship recipient from the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International. And when we were welcoming her into ACB and CCLVI, she was finishing her doctorate, her PhD in counseling at Mississippi State University, and undergoing chemotherapy for breast cancer at the same time. And we just found out we lost her. Her name is Paula Warren. Actually, it's Paula Warren Peace. Her husband's name was Peace. I thought that was a large distance to go for a pun. But anyway, Paula died on January 31st at the age of 50. And in the words of my friend Sue Amater, that's just too damn young. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay, I have a hand.
Hello, this is Steve Ford, and a friend of mine who I knew for a very long time when I grew up in Southern California. And I know a number of CCB members in Los Angeles, West Los Angeles, near Rosemary Dobbs, who passed away sometime this last month as a result of carcinoma of the liver. So that was quite a shock. I knew, had been told for the last couple of years or the last year or so that she was ill, and she was at the last, at the fall convention last year at the Crown Plaza, and I sat across from her at the banquet. So anyway, just remembering Rosemary Dobbs, who was a very fun-loving person. Thank you.
Anyone else seeking the mic?
Yes, I am. I am not with the Golden Gate chapter, and I hope I'm in the right year. You know, when you move along, your memory doesn't always move with you. But anyway, someone that I admired and loved dearly, and a lot of you may remember, Eva Block. Eva passed away, and I think at the age of 93, if I'm remembering correctly. And only in the last 2 years or so did Eva stop taking reservations for every event the Golden Gate chapter had. And for many years, she came to everything Bayview chapter had. And when we lost her, I felt I really lost a special friend. And she loved CCB, and she worked in it as long as she could and much longer than some of us probably did or will.
Anyone else?
This is Linda. Actually, another member of the Golden Gate chapter passed away just recently, James Mackey. Many of us knew him from his involvement in the Lighthouse, but he also came to conventions, a very wonderful human being with a very sweet personality. He had a massive heart attack.
I understand that Ezekiel Brooks from the High Desert chapter passed away very recently, and I was wondering if there's anyone from that chapter here that might want to share a little bit about him since he was the president.
If not, I'd like to share a real nice memory of Ezekiel, if there isn't anyone from his chapter here. Okay. Ezekiel Brooks, President, High Desert Chapter. Ezekiel, I remember meeting him in a hospitality, one of our hospitality, time in hospitality after all the hard work that we do all day. And Ezekiel, right away, he said, I'm the new president of the High Desert Chapter. He said, and I'm not real good in technology, and I don't do computers, and I don't carry note takers. He said, I don't even have those talking phones. He said, but I really love CCB, and as president of my chapter, he said, I want to do whatever it is that I need to do to make it a good chapter. And he just had such a positive attitude, and he was just the nicest guy. Anytime we would talk, you know, he would ask questions, and, you know, he said that he always felt welcome, and it didn't matter whether he was into technology or not. He said he always found, you know, people that were just like him as well, and he always felt welcome, and he really touched my heart that first time that I met him, because he just had such a wonderful attitude, and he was to be the delegate for the High Desert Chapter. He was planning on coming here. And I believe that it was just his time. I didn't hear anything about health issues or anything like that. But he just had such a positive attitude. And he was somebody who definitely touched my heart with that attitude. And I'm sure that his chapter will miss him. And, you know, I know that I'll miss seeing, you know, him at convention just with that positive attitude and that smile. And, you know, I just remember, I don't use technology. I don't have a note taker. I don't have... He said, but I can, you know, I just want to do what I can do for my chapter. And that was a wonderful attitude, and he'll be missed by me for sure. Thank you.
Unless there's anyone else, I think let's just pause for a moment or two and in our own way remember these individuals that have left us. Thank you very much. Next on our list is the credentials report. And I believe, Pamela, are you here?
I'm here.
Would you like to take over?
I have a mic right here.
Okay, it's yours.
Thank you, Jean. Okay, I'm going to start out by naming the chapters who have been seated, and then I'll name the ones who are not at the end. If anybody hears me make an error regarding your chapter, please let me know, because I am prepared to make any corrections. Knowing me, that will probably happen. But anyway, we'll start out then with the ACB Capital Chapter. Okay, president is Deborah Thompson. The delegate is Jeff Tom. The alternate delegate is Linda O'Neill. And the nominating committee representative is Jeff Tom. And the number of members is 42. And are you telling me I made an error already? Number of votes, 8.
Leave it to Jeff.
Okay. Active Blind Inland Valley Chapter. President Irene Nunez. Delegate Nellie Emerson. Alternate Delegate Nunn. Nominating Committee Chair Person Nellie Emerson. Number of members. Let's see here. Let me see. 10, and number of votes, 5. Okay, go ahead.
Wait, we'll have to get a mic.
Hi, this is Nellie Emerson. We have 14 members.
Got it, and then 5 votes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Nellie. Next is Alameda County Chapter. President Katrina McCurdy, Delegate Katrina McCurdy, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Chairperson Katrina McCurdy, Nominating Representative. Number of votes, number of members, 12, number of votes, 5. Association for Multicultural Concerns, President Lillian Scafie, Delegate Foster Brown, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Representative, Committee Representative Foster Brown, number of members, 14, number of votes, 5, as a special interest state affiliate. A The next would be the Bayview chapter. And President Mike Kastner and Delegate Steve Ford, Alternate Delegate Sally McGuire, Nominating Representative Steve Ford, Number of Members 43, Number of Votes 9. I missed out on that one. Braille Revival Eve of California.
Do we need to ask our immediate past president to leave the room? What a scandal.
See, you guys, I'm trying to go fast here to say not take your time. Braille Revival Eve of California, President Steve Fort. Delegate Marlene O'Neill, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Rep Marlene O'Neill, Number of Members 49, and Number of Votes 5 as a Special Interest State Affiliate. You guys are having too much fun. I want to go where you are.
Don't encourage them.
Charge penalties for, you know, like the Lions do if you do things bad.
Oh, yeah.
We can make some money.
15 yards. California Council of the Blind Students. President Lena Bandy. Delegate Lena Bandy. Alternate Delegate Tuan Yin. Nominating Committee Representative Lisa Cushman. Number of members 14, number of votes 5 as a special interest state affiliate. Next is California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. President Bernice Kandarian. Delegate Susan Hyatt. Thank you. Alternate Delegate Dan Smith. Nominating Committee Representative Donna Sanchez, and number of members 90, number of votes 5 as a special interest state affiliate. California Library Users, President Judy Wilkinson, Delegate Judy Wilkinson, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Representative Judy Wilkinson, number of members 36. God bless you. And amount of votes 5, special interest affiliate. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay, thank you. Next is the Compton chapter. Do we have a representative here from Compton chapter? Okay, because I was told that we were supposed to receive a representative today around 3 p.m. That wouldn't make it this morning, and I haven't heard anything. And I was looking for Mike Richardson. Is he in the room?
Jeff, can we please have order?
You have to go to the back of the room and turn toward the
it
wall.
It wasn't Jeff. Okay. Oh. Okay, well, whoever it is, if we could please have order.
I'm going to move on, you guys, so you don't want to miss me. Next is Contra Costa chapter, and the president is Gabe Griffith. The delegate is Gabe Griffith. The alternate delegate is Vita Zavoli. Nominating committee representative is Vita Zavoli. Number of members, 14. Number of votes, 5. Okay. Next would be the East Los Angeles chapter. President Luis Herrera. Delegate Luis Herrera. Alternate Delegate Stephanie Rude, Nominating Committee Representative Luis Herrera. Number of whole members, 30. Number of votes, 6. Next would be the Glendale Burbank chapter, and that is president is Artis Bazin. Delegate is Artis Bazin. Alternate delegate is Anthony Signorelli. Nominated committee representative is Artis Bazin. Number of members, 28. Number of votes, 6. The next would be the Golden Gate chapter. Okay, and there is a development with that that I wanted to let you know, that even though we didn't hear from a representative this morning, as far as credentials, we did receive the credentials from Martin Jones by phone. He had had a fall and had health issues, so he did contact me, so I did seat him based upon his explanation, which I'm going to talk about in a few moments. But, so Golden Gate chapter, President Dr. Martin Jones, Delegate Warren Cushman, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Chairperson Warren Cushman, number of members 25, and number of votes 5. I'm telling you guys, I want to come over there. Okay. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, President Penny Valdivinos, Delegate John Ross, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Representative John Ross, number of members 20, number of votes 5. Excuse me, you guys. Greater Long Beach chapter. President Michael Conrad. Delegate is Robert Wendt. Alternate Delegate Nunn. Nominating Committee Representative Robert Wendt. Number of members 19. Number of votes. Wait a minute here. 5. There you go. Thank you. I'll take that help while I lose my place. Greater Los Angeles chapter, President Pamela Metz, Delegate Pamela Metz, Alternate Delegate Abby Schumann, Nominating Committee Representative Abby Schumann, number of members 21, number of votes 5. Okay, special interest affiliate, Guide Dog Users of California, President Mary Beth Randall, Delegate Ann Kaiser, Alternate Delegate Mary Beth Randall, Nominating Committee Representative Mary Beth Randall, number of members 26, number of votes 5, special interest. Orange County chapter, President Andrea Pitzenbarger, Delegate Bonnie Rennie, Alternate Delegate Robert Rennie, Nominating Committee Representative Bonnie Rennie, number of members 23, number of votes 5. Orientation Center of the Blind Alumni Association, Presidente Alberto Contreras, Delegate Dirk Nyhard, Alternate Delegate Alberto Contreras, Nominating Committee Representative Albert Contreras, number of members 24, number of votes 5, State Special Interest Affiliate. Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of California, President David Hanlon, Delegate Joni Patchy, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Rep Joni Patchy, number of members 11, and number of votes 5. Redwood Empire Chapter. Okay. President Larry Hall. Delegate Veronica Damari. Alternate Delegate William Gillespie. Nominating Committee Representative Veronica Damari. Number of members, 50. And number of votes, 10. Okay. San Diego Braille Club Chapter. President George Drain. Delegate Joe Lopez. Alternate Delegate Charlene Ornelas. Nominating Committee Representative Joe Lopez. Number of members, 40. Number of votes, 8. Okay, San Diego Chapter, President Larry Freeman, Delegate, let's see what I wrote here. Delegate Patty Davis, Alternate Delegate Nunn, Nominating Committee Representative Patty Davis, Number of members 22, Number of votes 5. San Francisco Chapter. I was waiting for that one. President Linda Perel. Delegate Frank Welty. Alternate Delegate David Jackson, who wears the many hats, and I saw one of them. Nominating Committee Representative Linda Perel. Number of members, 33. And number of votes, 7. San Gabriel Valley Chapter. You better do that. President Pam Apology. I wonder who that is. Delegate Mitch Pomeranz. Alternate Delegate Vincent Calderon. Nominating Committee Representative Mitch Pomeranz. Number of members, 51. Number of votes, 10. Let's see here. Silicon Valley, Council of the Blind Chapter. Okay. President Rob Turner. Delegate Mike Keithley. Alternate Delegate Alice McGrath. Nominating Committee Representative Rob Turner. Number of members, 94. Number of votes, 19. 19 to translate. Okay. Solano Adult Blind Club. You guys, I'm almost done. You'll get rid of me if you let me finish. President Betty Christensen. Delegate Diane Phelps. Alternate Delegate Nunn. Nominating Committee Representative Diane Phelps. Number of members, 12. Number of votes, 5. Okay, I'm going to give you the chapter names of those that are not seated. And then I'm going to speak to you for just a couple of minutes, if I may. And Donna said I may, so. It pays to know people, you know? The Antelope Valley Chapter, these are the ones that are not seated. Butte County Council of the Blind Chapter. Okay, Coachella Valley Chapter. And then the Compton Chapter, because I haven't heard anyone. Greater San Joaquin, High Desert Chapter, Humboldt Council of the Blind Chapter, Inland Empire Chapter, San Bernardino Chapter, San Mateo County Chapter, wait, did I put that in the wrong place, you guys? Hang on, let me just make sure. Do I have a San Mateo person here? See, you guys threw me off. See, I was right. And Yosemite Gateway. Oh, you may. Okay. Hang on then. I missed you this morning. That could be why, huh? Okay. Hang on a minute then. Okay, President John Gasper, Delegate Margaret Buchanan, Buckman Garcia, excuse me, Alternate John Gasper, Nominating Committee Representative Margaret Buckman Garcia, Members 26, Number of Votes 5. So I will install you right now. Okay, so those are all the chapters are accounted for, either seated or not, and I've given you all those. And what I wanted to speak with you about for just a moment is I've tried to seat this time as many chapters as I could, even regardless of receipt of credentials and or dues or information, because I'm the new kid on the block and you guys aren't used to working with me, and I'm trying to learn to do this too, so I'm trying to give everybody the opportunity this time to be seated. But I want to let you know that starting this next fall convention, we are going to uphold the deadlines, because there's no point in imposing a deadline if we dispense with them for some chapters. And I don't want to not seat you guys, because then I won't have a job. So you guys just need to get your step in on time, and I will be putting my information on the California Connection and be reminding you about the deadline. You guys, please call me if you have any questions, because this time I only had one person call me, and that chapter was not going to attend, and I spoke with them, and here they are. So just let me know if you have questions. If I don't know the answers, I will find out. And I really want to see you guys, but we have to be fair, because it's not fair to those who are on time. And it's really difficult for the committee and myself and Ed to have an accurate account of the credentials when things are flowing in at the last minute. And I don't want to cheat anybody. So I guess enough said, but I would just urge you guys to treat it like you're voting for a state election, without the hanging chads, of course. And know that you only have so much time, you know. And let's get them all in on time. And next time, I promise to do better. So before I leave you, I just want to say thank you so very much to Donna for entrusting me.
Thank you, Pam.
And I hope I'll be worthy of that. I want to thank Roger Peterson and Rob Turner and Donna for allowing me the conference call that they had to try to get me up to speed on how to commence with this. And everyone has made me feel so welcome, and it has been so helpful. So I just especially want to say thank you to Ed, because I'm a technological moron, so Ed had to send me everything in Braille. And he earns his salary on me alone, believe me. So I just really want to say thank you to him. And thank you guys very much.
The credentials The Credentials Committee so moves the adoption of the report. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you very much. Okay. You know, our next presentation, I have to thank Tuan Nguyen for a member of the ACB Capital Chapter. He put on the list an article about what's happening with the NASA Lunar Science Institute, and read it, and it actually brought back a lot of memories of childhood when President Kennedy announced that we were going to go to space and to the moon in 10 years, and we did less than 10 years, and, you know, we've been there. Unfortunately, we haven't stayed there at this point, but there's a lot of new things happening. And in the article, I was to learn that there's opportunities for those of us who had the dream to be an astronaut and go in there. We may not be able to do that this time, maybe in a century or two, but there's some way we can participate actively and help NASA. So we invited Brian Day, who is the Citizen Science Lead and Education Specialist for the NASA Lunar Space Institute in Moffett Field in California, which is it's an old retired Navy facility that's very close to here. And let's give Brian a hand.
Thank you all very much for having me here tonight. I'm going to apologize in advance for my raspy voice. I've been fighting a losing battle with allergies this year, and I'll try and keep it together here. I am an astronomer. And when people think of astronomers, they typically think of someone who has their eye up to a telescope looking up at the sky. And at one time, that is in fact how it was. But things have progressed quite a bit since then. And now, as astronomers, we use the entire electromagnetic spectrum, from radio waves through microwaves, infrared, visible, ultraviolet, X-rays, and gamma rays. Visible light is just a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of that entire electromagnetic spectrum. And it turns out that most of what the universe is telling us is being told to us in these invisible wavelengths. So we're going to take a different approach to astronomy tonight. And what we're going to do is concentrate on the invisible, because that's where most of the story is. The broadest part of the electromagnetic spectrum is the radio. That's where most of the information is. And we are all familiar with radio. And we are all familiar with how these waves of energy can be converted into waves of sound. We all experience this in our cars and in our homes by listening to the radio. But it turns out that throughout the universe, there are sources that are broadcasting radio waves. And so what we can do is we can take those radio waves and turn them into sound waves. So the way I'd like to start out tonight is by having you all listen to the universe. We'll start out very, very close. We'll start out right here at the top of our atmosphere. So coming from our sun, there is a solar wind, this high-speed stream of very energetic particles that is slamming into our atmosphere. And as it slams into our atmosphere, it releases a lot of energy in the form of radio waves. And so now we're going to listen, if my computer behaves, we're going to listen to these waves of the aurora. You may know the aurora as the northern and southern lights, but have you ever heard them? Here we go. Drum roll, please. It almost sounds like it's talking to us, doesn't it? Now, fortunately, a lot of that radiation from the sun, a lot of that solar wind, is blocked by the Earth's magnetic field. The Earth has this magnetic shield around it. And a lot of those particles, those charged particles from the sun, get caught in that magnetic shield. And as they do, they spiral through these magnetic field lines and again release energy. Let's listen to the solar wind trapped within our magnetosphere. Kind of an interesting sound too. So now let's step out a little bit. It turns out, of course, the largest planet in our solar system is Jupiter. If Jupiter were hollow, you could fit 1,000 Earths inside of it. It is a big planet. And when the Voyager spacecraft made its way to Jupiter, as it approached Jupiter, it turns out Jupiter, as it's plowing through space, makes a big wave ahead of it in this solar wind. Picture yourself standing in a swimming pool and pushing your arm through the water. If you do so, you can make a wave in front of your arm. If you do it fast enough, you can make a mess. Well, Jupiter's really big, and it's plowing through that solar wind, and it makes a great big wave. What you're about to hear is the little Voyager spacecraft crashing through that wave on its way to Jupiter. I hope that's what we hear.
Jovian bow shock.
Think of that little robotic spacecraft crashing through that big wave. Now, as wonderful as Jupiter is, most people like Saturn even better. Saturn is beautiful because it has this wonderful set of rings around it. Saturn is big in and of itself. You could fit 763 Earths inside of it. Now, Saturn, remember we just listened to the Earth's aurora. Now we're going to listen to the aurora of Saturn as recorded by the Cassini spacecraft. This is wonderful. About you, I think Saturn is ready for Halloween. So Saturn also has a bow shock, this big wave in front of it, and Cassini plowed through the Bowshock on the way. You'll hear the aurora of Saturn as we're approaching the Bowshock, and then you'll hear us cross. This is fun stuff. Have I mentioned I like my job? Okay. If any of you were here last night, you experienced a wonderful lightning storm. Well, let me tell you something. That was nothing compared to the lightning storms on Saturn. Here, I would like you to listen to what Cassini recorded in terms of lightning flashes on Saturn. Each one of those cracks. Wow, that's weather. As big as Jupiter and Saturn are, they don't come close to the biggest thing in our solar system, the sun. The sun is our nearest star. And if the sun were hollow, you could fit 1,300,000 Earths inside of it. The sun has spectacular eruptions called solar flares, gigantic explosions that dwarf if every nuclear weapon on the Earth were to go off simultaneously, that would be tiny compared to a typical solar flare. So let's listen to the sound of a solar flare. Something you want to hear from a distance. So, the sun is really big, but in the scheme of things, the sun is what we call a dwarf star. There are stars out there that are thousands and tens of thousands of times the size of our sun. Now, imagine one of these very massive stars. When it comes to the end of its life cycle and it runs out of fuel, it goes through one last hurrah in a gigantic explosion called a supernova. And then the remains of that star collapse down into something we call a neutron star. Imagine something larger than our sun that is completely taken over by gravity, and gravity crushes it down from being something many thousands of miles in diameter to perhaps only 8 miles in diameter. One teaspoon of material from the surface of a neutron star would weigh about 10 million tons. This is trash compaction taken to its ultimate level. But as these stars are crushed down upon themselves, they can send out beams of energy, very narrow beams. And if that beam does not happen to sweep across you, you don't hear it, you have no idea. But if you happen to be lined up so that this beam does sweep across you, then you can detect that energy. And the number of times that that energy swings around, that can tell you how fast that neutron star is spinning. So imagine something incredibly, incredibly, incredibly massive. But here we're going to hear one of these neutron stars rotating 1.4 times every second. Each of those big pieces is that neutron star spinning. But there are many neutron stars out there, and some spin faster. That was 1.4 times. Here's another one that's spinning 11 times a second. And imagine how huge that is and how fast it's turning. But that's still just getting started. Here's one from an explosion that happened in the year 1054. And this is spinning 30 times a second. And taking it to the next step, another pulsar, another neutron star spinning 174 times a second. Still not the record holder. You are about to hear a pulsar, a neutron star, spinning 642 times a second. Its surface is moving at 1/7 the speed of light. The universe is a very strange place. So, neutron stars are incredibly, incredibly dense. But as you may have heard, there's something even bigger and nastier out there, and those are the black holes. Something so massive that nothing can escape. Now, we can't hear anything coming out of the black hole, but we can hear stuff going in. So imagine a whirlpool of gas and dust, maybe planets, who knows what else. Maybe even your little dog, Toto, we don't know. This is kind of subtle, but listen, and you can hear stuff whirling into a black hole. You really don't want to hear that any closer. But probably the most spectacular event to have ever happened in the history of the universe was that event that began the universe some 13.75 billion years ago, the Titanic explosion known as the Big Bang. And when you have something as big as the Big Bang, you just can't hide the evidence of that. And as a matter of fact, if we tune down into the microwave region, we can still hear the echo of the Big Bang. So let's listen to that together. This is the sound that started it all. So, now, I make my living studying the moon. And I got to tell you, the moon doesn't make any of those interesting sounds. But don't give up on me yet. The moon is actually a fascinating place. And it's turned out to be a lot more fascinating than we ever realized. Back during the Apollo time, we saw the moon as an arid, absolutely airless, geologically dead place. But now, as a result of a new generation of robotic lunar explorers, we are learning that our thoughts about the moon are just about as wrong as they could be. I had the distinct privilege of working on a mission called LCROSS that in 2009 was able to discover water ice at the South Pole of the Moon, and lots of it, We think there could be hundreds of millions of tons of water ice. The moon's not that dry. Again, we thought the moon was geologically dead. We now know there are things called moonquakes. And some of these moonquakes can get up to Richter scale magnitude 5.5 and last for over 10 minutes. Please allow me to assure you that if you're in a 5.5 magnitude earthquake that is lasting for 10 minutes, you will very quickly conclude that the object you're sitting on is not geologically dead. And as far as an atmosphere goes, it turns out the moon indeed does have an atmosphere. It is a very, very, very thin atmosphere. The atmosphere at the surface of the moon is only about as thick as the outermost fringes of the Earth's atmosphere where the International Space Station is orbiting. But even so, it's an important kind of atmosphere. We call it, technically, a surface boundary exosphere, which is a technical term for these really, really, really thin atmospheres. But it turns out this is the most common type of atmosphere in our solar system. The moon has one. Mercury has one. Many of the larger asteroids, moons of the giant planets, even some of the distant icy Kuiper Belt worlds out beyond Neptune. It is the most common type of atmosphere in our solar system, and we know next to nothing about it. But we happen to have one in our own backyard at the moon. How lucky is that? So we're going to explore it with a brand new robotic moon mission called LADEE, the Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer. And LADEE is scheduled to launch next year. That's why my friends and I at work aren't sleeping. But the mission of LADEE is to go into orbit around the moon and to dip down low and fly through the lunar atmosphere to sample it, to let us know what its structure is and what it is made of. Again, this is a fun job. Now, we think that there could be several sources for the moon's atmosphere. One of the more important sources, we think, is meteoroids, rocks in space, slamming into the surface of the moon. And this is something that we're going to have telescopes pointed at the moon during the course of our mission, and we're going to be looking for the signs of these impacts on the moon while we are flying, so that we can correlate impacts with changes that we measure from our instruments in the structure and composition of the lunar atmosphere. But here's a problem. Most of the things hitting the moon are so small that we will never be able to detect those impacts from here on Earth. But there is a workaround. Because the Earth and the moon are traveling together through space. As they travel together through space, they encounter these swarms of debris. Those swarms hit the moon, and most of the time we see no evidence of it. But it hits the atmosphere of the Earth, and these little particles slam into the atmosphere at tens of thousands of miles an hour. Everybody, take your hands, put them in front of you, and rub them together really fast. What do you feel? Heat, friction. And you are rubbing your hands a whole lot slower than 60,000 miles an hour. That's good. Please do not rub your hands at 60,000 miles an hour. You will catch the room on fire. Don't do that. But when one of these little particles comes into the atmosphere, it lights up the night sky in what is called a meteor, or sometimes people call a falling star. And so what we are asking people to do is go out and count the meteors in the sky. And as we count the meteors in the sky, we can then make inferences as to what's happening on the surface of the moon. And that's well and good. You can count meteors in the sky when the sky is clear. You can count meteors in the sky when the sky is dark. Guess what? The sky is dark less than half the day. And it's oftentimes not clear. But here's where things get really interesting. Because as those meteors come in, they come in so fast and so hot, they create a charged cloud, an ionized column of air. And radio waves can bounce off those trails. Now, radio amateurs have known about this for a long time. You can have a station that is beyond the horizon, that is blocked by the curvature of the Earth, and it's broadcasting and you can't hear it. But then a meteor appears overhead, and the radio waves can bounce off that cloud of ionized gas and bounce back down to you. For an instant, you have that communication. You can hear that signal. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to play for you the sound, the radio sound of a meteor. Sometimes you just get one of them. Sometimes you get a flock of them. Let's listen to a bunch of them coming in. So here's the neat thing. There are advantages to doing meteor observations in radio. If it's cloudy, no problem. If it's daylight, no problem. There are really strong advantages. Right now, I've been going out talking to amateur radio groups and trying to enlist them. We want their help in helping to count the meteors during the course of the LADEE mission. Now, it turns out amateur radio is a great hobby for people who are visually impaired. We have a lot of people in your community who are out there doing this. Do we have any in this audience here? You have made me very, very happy because you think I came here just to talk to you. Ah, I am here to recruit. So I am looking for radio amateurs. And beyond that, I'm looking for a great educational opportunity. I had the distinct honor of speaking at a school assembly last month at the California School for the Blind. And here you have a bunch of highly motivated students, many of whom never, ever thought that they might have the opportunity to make astronomical observations that would support the science of a mission to the moon. But as you've heard tonight, that possibility is very, very real. So what I am working on doing is pairing these students with the amateur radio community, getting these people working together so that our ham radio enthusiasts, as well as our blind students, can participate in our next great adventure in exploring the moon. And you know something? I have some people in this room here that can really help bridge that situation. So I wasn't kidding when I said I'm coming here to recruit. I want your help. We want your help in our next great adventure of exploring the moon. I hope you'll join us. Thank you.
We can take just a few questions. Is there any, if we can get a mic, if you'd stand up, indicate that you would like to ask a question.
GGD Marie, I'm wondering, are you going to record the sounds from the launch all the way to the moon and then back? And if that's the way it is, how long will that take?
We want people to actually be recording these meteor sounds while we are doing our science mission, while we are actually in orbit and flying through the lunar atmosphere. And the way our schedule works is that we launch and then we take a very energy stingy approach to the moon. We take essentially a full month to get to the moon. Once we get to the moon, we will go into a checkout orbit, make sure that everything's working. That will take 30 days, and we have the option of extending that to 60 days. So 2 to 3 months after launch, we will then drop down into our science orbit. And we will do that science for 100 days. So those are the 100 days that we're looking for people to be listening. Great question. Thank you.
Okay. We have members of our chapter that would probably be interested in that. What is your contact information?
I will leave. In fact, I've given one of my cards here to Jean, and Jean, please feel free to disseminate my email to anyone who's interested.
We'll get on the connection.
So, yes. Yeah, I'm not here to be anonymous.
Bill Gillespie, I've been a radio ham operator for 24 years. And I was wanting to know what equipment I need to be one of the trackers.
You know, we're working on that right now. It turns out that the way this has been done in the past, with people, again, just using your regular radio setup, typically maybe a 6-foot Yagi antenna, people would tune to either channel 3 or channel 4, whichever one you didn't have in your area. And then you'd wait till you got a signal from a channel 3 or channel 4 that was over the horizon. But something happened a few years ago. We switched to digital TV and all the frequencies changed.
Amen.
All those broadcast signals that we were depending on are gone. But we are right now, so this is where I'm working with the amateur radio community. We're looking at solutions. And there's actually a piece of software out there that we're looking at that enables you to get rid of worrying about the TV transmitter. And instead, it's just if you have two people who are cooperating and they have their ham radios set up so that, again, they are just over the horizon from each other, but one is transmitting, the other is receiving, and you wait till you hear that sudden transmission from your friend over the horizon, and it counts. There is software out there that we're going to be experimenting with. So again, what we would really love to have is you as an experienced ham getting involved with us and helping to determine the details of how we're going to do this. I am planning to have a meeting at NASA Ames Research Center this summer, and I'll be publishing that information. I would encourage you to come and be part of the discussion.
Any other questions?
Good evening, everyone. My fellow CCB member and Brian Day. My name is Tuan Nguyen. I'm a physics major at Sacramento State and with a minor in mathematics. I want to get a comment, and I wanted to thank you, Brian Day, for an excellent explanation of something in such a way that it's meaningfully understandable language for a non-scientific person to convey and understand. This is something it incredibly difficult to explain in a way that it a person who's studying physics like I am, it's so amazing how the universe is comprised of, and the particles and the ionizing radiation and all that. It's so amazing. And I'm actually taking a course in quantum mechanics, and I'm studying that with an introduction to particle physics and classical mechanics. I found it so interesting, but I had to live day and night with a nightmare to do the work, do the theoretical work and complex calculations. And Brian Day is so helpful in turning the language in a way for everybody to understand with no knowledge of physics and quantum or whatever that is. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We can take just one more question.
Hi, Frank Welty. I remember back in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of reports about a NASA project called SETI Online, where people's computers, where NASA was asking people to donate, essentially to use their PCs to donate computer time so that they could process computer data that was gathered on the SETI project. And I'm wondering, are there other NASA projects like that, where those of us that aren't ham people but have computers can maybe contribute our computers to NASA projects?
Yes, so this area of citizen science is a huge one. You mentioned the SETI at Home program, and that is still going on. As a matter of fact, it's probably more important than ever, because one of the things we've learned from a new probe called Kepler. Tonight we were just talking about the planets in our solar system. But Kepler is looking out around other stars, and it is finding that there are planets everywhere we look. Okay, please allow me to boggle you with just a few numbers here. We talk about the 9 planets of our solar system. Yes, Pluto's a planet. Now, our sun is one of several hundred billion stars in our galaxy. I don't know about you, I have a hard time comprehending 100 billion. I have a hard time comprehending 12. But if we were all to go over to the beach at Santa Cruz and I were to give you the assignment of counting every single grain of sand on the beach, that's about how many stars there are in our galaxy. And now we realize that most of those have planets going around them. But as we look further out, we see that ours is just one of hundreds of billions of galaxies. The numbers get staggering. Show of hands, who out there thinks we're alone? Didn't think so. So, SETI has become all the more important, SETI at Home. But also now, as you mentioned, there are other programs. So getting all that data back from Kepler requires a lot of manipulation. So people with computers can help with the Kepler data. So again, one of the things that you're going to see more and more of is that the citizen scientist is really, really important. And astronomy is one of those areas where the amateur, it's one of the few areas where the amateur can make very important discoveries. You see very few discoveries by amateur nuclear physicists. But amateur astronomers make discoveries just about every day. So this is your area.
I said we only have one more, and I just informed that we got somebody from ACB Radio that would like to pose a question. So how do we get that, Donna?
A lot of folks still have radios with the old analog TV sound, and they're asking, can they get it?
So the type of radios that we're talking about are the types of radios that, not that you're tuning in to listen to your favorite station typically, it's the type of radios that ham operators will use. And they're tunable across a wide range of frequencies. They can go to from the FM band, lower areas of the FM band. We're talking about 30 megahertz to maybe 80. We're also talking about some of the VHF signals that used to be broadcast. So radios that can pick up in that area, those are still very useful. It's just some of the beacons that we had in the past aren't there anymore. So what we're doing, what we're looking to do, we're working with the radio community to replace those beacons. In Europe and in Japan, they have done that. They've actually put beacons up, transmitting at the correct wavelengths so that amateur radio operators can detect the meteors. They put these networks of beacons up. We have not done that in the United States. I'm here to talk science, not politics. But I will point out that, again, there can be workarounds. And if you don't have a Channel 4 transmitter anymore, you may have a ham who will tune his radio to broadcast at that frequency. We can get creative. But again, we're going to have to sit down. We will get the radio people together with our science people, and we will work it out. And I'm trying very hard this summer to have that meeting. And I invite you to be part of it. I'm not asking you to do this because it's easy. If it was easy, I wouldn't need your help. But there is great expertise in this room, and I want to draw upon it. You can help us do the hard stuff. You can help us find the solutions and discover what's going on out there.
Thank you very much. Brian, get us the information, and we will get it disseminated to our membership and other interested parties.
Thank you.
Okay. And thank you for giving your evening to us. Okay. Yes, we will get into connection, too. And we will get Brian's contact information, the connection, next week's connection, yes. Okay. We're going to right now hear from Elena Thomas, who's going to talk, who is our statewide coordinator of the Mudstrut, and we're going to hear the 2012 Mudstrut report. Elena?
Thank you. Well, I got to say, Brian's act is hard to follow. That was pretty great. Pretty exciting stuff, but you should all be awake, so it's a good thing. My name is Elena Thomason, and I've been a CCB member since 1971. And so I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of you, and I've had the opportunity to gain greatly from the benefits of this organization. And I want to thank President Donna and the board for putting their faith in me to take on this assignment. During the course of my professional life in working with nonprofit organizations for the blind, I had experience in sponsoring 22 what we call dogathons that were very similar to the Mutt Strip concept, a little bit different, but similar enough. And I learned a great deal from that experience, and I'm grateful to CCB for giving me the opportunity to utilize some of the stuff I learned along the way. And hopefully this is, going to result in bringing in some much-needed funding for our organization. I've been fighting allergies for the last 24 hours, so forgive me. I'm just doing the best I can here. So what is Mutt Strut? For anybody in the room that hasn't heard of Mutt Strut, or maybe you're new to the organization or you're a visitor tonight, it's an opportunity. It's a statewide fundraiser. We're getting ready to move into our second annual Mutt Strut, which will be held on September 8th, 2012. It will be held in three locations. The Sacramento region will actually be at the state capitol. The San Francisco Bay Area will be held in San Francisco at the Civic Center. And the Los Angeles area will be held in Pasadena at Memorial Park. We are encouraging everyone, from member to volunteer to scholarship recipients, anyone, including our families, and I happen to have my sister and my mother here tonight, to be involved in the Mutt Strut. This morning, delegates should have received packets from the Mutt Strut committee that had some large print and braille information in there as to the kinds of things we're looking for, the kinds of things you can help us get, or that you will need to make your event successful. On that document, which was compiled by Jeff Tom and edited by my sister Lynn, who is a member of our chapter in here tonight, I put all of my contact information, my phone numbers, my email, cell phone number, etc. And the reason I did that is that I want to be available to any and all of you. If you have a question, you have a concern, you're getting ready to go talk to a Lions meeting and your stomach is filled with butterflies, and if you could just talk to somebody about this Lions Club meeting before you have to go, maybe I could be your somebody and you could try to contact me. So that contact information was put on that page so that I can be a resource to you. And as Pam said earlier, if I don't have the answer, I will sure seek to find it as best as I can. In that packet as well is the DVD that was made at the Spring Convention last year, What Blind Is Not. Is that right, Donna? Did I get it right this time? Okay. And this is a wonderful story of successful, involved, productive blind people. Members of ours, and there's five short segments on the DVD. It's a wonderful tool to use when you're out doing prospective giving and asking, giving a presentation and asking for the closure. And we encourage you to use this as you move out in your communities, and each chapter and each interest group at this point should have one at their disposal. So that's why that was handed out this morning, and that's why you have it. We want you to take it back to your chapters, delegates, and we want for your chapters to be using the materials provided to you. we would also like for each chapter to designate a Mutt Strutt person that will be in contact with the committees or on the committees. I'd like to thank the committee members that have worked with me thus far. They've been on hours and hours and hours of work each week, volunteering their time and their talents. And I've enjoyed working with every one of you, and I hope I get the opportunity before the convention is over to meet all of you, because I haven't met all of you quite yet. At last night's board meeting, a couple things I heard that I want to highlight this evening. I heard that in order for our organization to balance our budget this year, we had to transfer $28,000 out of our reserves. And I asked myself, how long can we continue to operate as the California Council of the Blind if we are utilizing our rainy day money, so to speak, and the next time the rainy day hits, we may just be out of business. I also heard another interesting fact last night that really, really hit home, and that is that the current budget is projecting the Mutt Strutt program to bring in $47,000. Last year, the Mutt Strutt, and I thank those people that put Mutt Strutt on the map at the beginning last year that worked very hard to plant the seeds that we're working on this year. Last year, we brought in $14,000. It's a major jump to go from 14 to 47. And it kind of reminded me that we can do this if we all, each and every one of you and me, give something towards the Mutt Strutt. Now, several years ago in the education program, there was a program called No Child Left Behind. And I always thought that was so cool, that every kid had an opportunity to thrive and move on and be something and make something of themselves. And so in my campaign for Mutt Strutt this year, I'm saying no one left untold. So what does that mean? That means that for all of us, we are going to tell our message. We are going to tell our story from going to school in the mornings and being around other students and our professors, the cab driver, the friendly, your doctor, your dentist. My dentist, of all people, gave my dog $100 last year. Who would think my dentist would give $100? My goodness. And by the way, I'm very happy to be here tonight with my dog, Tahoe, in the Sacramento region. Last year, she raised $1,300. And I think that just goes to show that if you tell everybody, you share the story with everyone, and no one goes untold, it's amazing what you can yield. Maybe your cab driver will just give you a dollar, but if you add it to the $5 that your grocery man's going to give you, and the postman might sponsor, and the grocery guy that you go to every week, and your barber that you see every once a month, and you start adding up all those dollars, it's amazing what you can make happen. We are going to be, I want to back up here. I would like for everyone to stop for a moment and think about the people in your life that you see on a regular daily, weekly, monthly basis. Then I'd like for you to think about your own position in regards to financial resources. At this time, we're going to have some walkers walking the floor. They're going to be handing out a postcard to everyone and a pencil if you need it, because we're going to ask you to write on this card. And if you need help writing, you can raise your hand and one of our spotters on the floor will come help you. What we would like for each of you to do, because I firmly believe, and I'm glad President Donna let me do this, that the success of our Mutt Strutt needs to start right here in this room with each member of this organization. I do not think that we have the right to go out and ask people for money, ask merchants for in-kind donations, when we as members are not supporting our own fundraiser. So tonight, I would like for you to take this card, and I'd like you to write down a sum of money that you personally will pledge to bring into this organization between now and August 15th. I don't want your name. This is something that you and your conscience will decide what is right for you. But I want to see from the onset, from the beginning of launching our Mudstrut 2012, where's our membership on this, and how much are we as members who yield the benefits from this fine organization, how much money are we willing to put out there? And I would like each person in this room to have a card in their hand. That means directors, officers, presenters, members, volunteers. At the end of the evening, we are going to hand over these cards to our treasurer, Peter Pardini. He's going to put the final computations on to our pledge for tonight. Tomorrow afternoon at the fundraising committee meeting, he is going to be announcing the grand total of our pledge. That will also go on to the Capital Connection, and that will also go into the Blind Californians, so everybody knows what was done here tonight. And then we're going to ask that everybody gets their pledges into the office, into Ed, no later than August 15th of 2012, if at all possible. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I hope not to take up any more of it, but all I can say is come with me and let's strut our stuff at Doggett, at Mudstrut. Thank you.
We can take a few. Kathy Skivers, I will recognize you. If we can get a mic to Kathy, please.
A mic to Kathy. Hello to Kathy. Welcome.
It's coming.
You're lucky. The mic came. I was about to broadcast in my outside voice when I used to call the kids. Anyway, my question, I'm not clear on what's happening here. You want us on each card, the card that we get, you want us to put an amount that we pledge, and you want our names on these cards?
No. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. This isn't, no. No. We are just interested in knowing where we are as far as our membership, what our base, where we're starting. We have $47,000 to raise here.
And what was the August 15th date, what's supposed to be into the treasurer by then?
Yes.
What is?
Your pledge.
How much you're going to raise?
If you pledge $5, we'd like to see it by August 15th. If you pledge $4,000, we'd like to see it by August 15th. We'd like to get it in and on the records and dealt with before the massive amounts of Mudstrut
Elaine,
comes
if I had
in.
$4,000, I'd be on vacation.
Yeah.
Okay, I think there's a few more questions, and if people could just wait until we get a mic to you, stand up if you can to let them, the person, if I think it's Ed and whoever, getting you a mic.
Okay, Sheila Gunn Cushman. So my question, Elena, is honestly, I am scraping bottom myself, but I have resources other than money. And one of the things that I wanted to do last year and was never able was to buy a Mudstrut T-shirt, whether I go to the actual event or not, because then they were only in Sacramento and L.A. Now we've got one in San Francisco. I'll probably go. And what I might even do is get connected with ham operators around, because I have a ham radio, and we could even, like, do stuff with the event. But I don't know if I'm that organized. But anyway, I have resources, and Lisa's on almost every Mudstrut call. And so can you give those of us that are daunted by dollar signs at this point other ideas, other than passing on the message, which we'll do?
I'm not sure I understand the question, because what I'm asking, Sheila, is for each person to decide for themselves what they feel comfortable in bringing that they can bring to the organization, even if it means not out of your pocket. Doesn't have to be out of your pocket at all, but you're going to be responsible to get the $25 worth of pledge money from somewhere. You feel comfortable doing that. So I'm not asking necessarily that you take money out of your pocket. Okay, what I'm asking is how much do you think you can be responsible for bringing in to the organization? And I thank you for saying that about T-shirts, because we had tons of T-shirts over from last year. And I don't know if we've made any attempt to sell them.
Yes.
We have made an attempt to sell them. Okay. Do we have one? Gosh, I wish I had one on my back. I just take it off.
I know. Gee, did I pack my Mud Strut T-shirt with me?
I know. This is getting risque. It's Elena? Time to go home. It's getting late.
Elena?
What?
This is Judy Wilkinson.
Yeah, Judy.
I'm on the Mud Strut Planning Committee and proud to be so. And I want to underscore what you're saying. One of the reasons we have this fundraiser is because we vowed we wouldn't keep going to the well, that we wouldn't keep asking our membership to dig in their pockets. But we want to dig in every other pocket we can think of.
Exactly.
Every dog walker you know, every cat lover. And really, I was amazed last year. I started just writing to my friends, and I'm embarrassed to say I didn't do it until about 2.5 weeks before the event. I got pledges for around $500. I'm embarrassed that I didn't do better, but I'm sure going to do better this year. The real point is I don't know anybody that you don't know. I don't have any connections that you don't have. And, I mean, Elena has just reminded me, when I go to the See's Candy Store, I can just say, you know, I'm doing this. People love sponsoring walk-a-thon things. They do it all the time. Look at what money the Susan Coleman Foundation raises. Just because people are walking and they've got the idea now. We've got to do it this year, and we've got to do this 3 years from now. And pretty soon, we want to be as big as Susan Coleman. We want to really get this to be the thing people think, oh, yeah, that's that organization that raises that money every September. Every dog walker, you know. Anyway, made my point. Please, it's not money out of your pocket. I mean, frankly, the money out of your pocket, while we're going to invite every chapter member we can, we want them all there. We want us all to be together. But that's not where the money's going to really come from. Go out there and let's talk to everybody we know.
Thank you, Judy.
We have two more. You have two more.
We need to let people know what Mud Strut is, what it does. What do people do?
Okay. Some run and some walk. Some have dogs, some don't, but everybody has a blast. Very fun event. You pay to walk or you pay to run, and depending on what geographic area, and because San Francisco and Sacramento are going to be set up a little differently than Los Angeles. People pay to register to come and walk, and they also collect sponsors from people they know and friends, and they bring their sponsors to CCB.
I have a question, Ms. Pete Romero. If we do decide that we want to donate out of our own pocket, we're not sponsoring any particular dog, right? We just say we want to make a donation or whatever it is. And then,
exactly.
Oh, okay, fine. Thank you.
Yeah. However, okay. If you want to sponsor Tahoe, she's...
Elena, we're going to have to wrap it up, but can you give people a way of contacting you? If they have any questions or want to help volunteer,
ways? It's real easy because it's Elena Thomason, and that's with an A. I'm not a Thompson. I'm a Thomason at sbcglobo.net. Elena, Elena Thomason, Thomason. Thomason at sbcglobo.net.
Thank you very much, Elena.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a microphone. This is Charlene Ornelas. I have Ken Metz on my cell phone, and he has something to say. Go for it.
First of all, I'd like to say good evening to everybody.
We can't hear it.
I can't. Hang on. I can't get you. Ken, we can't hear you. Ken
can't hear you either.
I hate to say this.
Organization. And if we do our best, even if it's $1, $5, 10, whatever you can put down on that card, and then you go to other people, they're going to be very happy to help contribute to the things that you really believe in. And we always look at ourselves as trying to sell tickets or whatever we're doing only to ourselves. We need to begin to think outside the box and go to the community at large, because that's where the money is, folks. It's not necessarily just within CCB by any means, but if we can get out to the community, that's where we have to go, and that's where I think we can eventually turn this into a tremendous fundraiser where we won't have to worry every year about where funding is going to come from.
Please list everyone's attention,
please.
And I
want to wish everyone a great convention. Yay!
Thank you very much, Ken. And we will see that people give what support they can to the Mudstrut. This is critical. This we really need to support this and the people who are organizing it. So please do whatever you can. Thank you. And again, thank you, Elena, for your presentation this evening. Okay, before we get to our next thing, if Ed's around, let's do a door prize.
Yay! Okay.
Harriet and David.
Harry.
Goodie box, okay. And this is from what chapter? Ed?
ACB Capital?
ACB Capital. No, I didn't know. ACB Capital chapter.
Ron Bateman.
Ron? Bateman. Ron? Yeah. Connie Bateman.
Quit looking at the tickets.
Gina McCoy.
She's here.
Gina? No, she's not here.
No? I thought she was here? Back there.
Raise your hand, please. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Let's do one more, Ed. Bag of fudge.
Alameda County chapter.
Alameda chapter.
It is Susan Hyatt.
Susan Hyatt.
Yay.
Congratulations, Susan. Okay. Our next is the governmental affairs report, and we will have a report done by our chair of the governmental affairs committee, Jeff Tom.
Okay, thank you. So before I start, I want to wear for about 30 seconds my ACB board hat and make a suggestion to our next speaker, who you will hear soon, and who is a very important personage in the ACB radio. And I would suggest that after Brian's talk, you know, there's a channel that they call ACB World. It should now be ACB Universe. So, my one announcement is that resolutions will occur 10 minutes after nominating. There are several of us that have to go to the nominations committee. So,
what time is that?
The nominations committee is right after we finish.
No.
So, what you want to know, what, Gene? I'm not sure what Gene's question is. Okay, let me go through some things somewhat quickly. I'm going to give you my contact information first because I'm not going to give you a lot of the specifics on phone numbers to call and some of the hearing rooms. I'm going to send a lot of it out over the next few days, but there are other people who don't have access to all of it, and so I'm going to give you the chance to email me personally or call me if there's something you're interested in following up on and doing. So my phone is 916-995-3967. That's 916-995-3967. And my email is J-S, as in Stephen, J-S-T-H-O-M at Comcast.net, J-S-Tom at Comcast.net. So if there's anything that anyone wants to follow up on after this convention is over, please feel free to do so. Okay. Yes, Kathy?
Again, like we used to on the connection, or have a number where it can be accessed by telephone. I'm sorry, I'm not the only person that doesn't have emails, computers, and all that other good stuff. The bulk of our members don't have it, and the bulk of our members need to know what's happening so they can get off our DDA combined and get some calls in where we need them.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. We'll try and do better to get telephone government affairs reports out. That is something that we haven't done enough of, and so I will work harder to get that done. Thank you. And that is really important. Okay. Let's see. We have one bill this year that is essentially our bill. AB 2041 is the bill number. Last year, we got passed through Assemblymember member Swanson, who we're honoring at tomorrow night's banquet. His aide will be here to accept an award from us. And he got through AB 410. That bill required certain state agencies to provide copies of regulations in formats readable through screen reader software, narrative descriptions. Now, there was a slight problem with that bill because of another conflicting bill, and there was a provision in that bill that required that announcements of these regulations contain an item that says that, you know, a blind or visually impaired person could get such a copy of a regulation upon request. And that particular item got deleted from the law because of a conflicting bill. So you can still get, if it's one of the right agencies, you can still get the regulation, but that little other requirement that goes along with it didn't get passed. So AB 2041 is sort of a technical, at least we characterize it as such, cleaning up last year's bill. It's coming up next week on the 17th in the Assembly Business and Transportation Committee. And if any of you want to call that committee, please get a hold of me, and I will get the information out to who you can call on that. And I also intend to send information out before then. And I'll try, Kathy, to follow up with that. I can maybe get it in on Monday on some sort of a governmental affairs report that we can do to get that out. Okay, next bill, AB 1879. This is a bill by Assemblymember Beth Gaines, and it is a bill that is basically being sponsored by the building industry, the hotel industry. It wants the state architect to compile a list of all the conflicts between the ADA and the Title 24 and it's facially neutral, meaning it doesn't come out and say it. But what it's really trying to do, we think, and others do too, is to begin the further erosion of some of the rights that we've been able to obtain over the years. We did oppose it. Unfortunately, we were the only ones that testified. But sometimes you got to do what you got to do. We didn't win in the first hearing. However, we're going to go talk to the author at the urging of the committee chair, and who knows, maybe we'll work something out, and maybe we won't. But you know, we're not the type of organization that is going to run from, you know, dealing with the opposition, especially when the committee chair says, "Look, you guys try to work something out." Well, then we're going to try and do that. So we'll see what happens as that goes along, and we'll get. At this point, there's not anything more to, you know, tell you. But stay tuned. I'm sure there will be. AB 1841. This was a bill by Assemblymember Cook. The Government Affairs Committee voted to oppose this bill. This is a bill that would have eliminated the right of an IHSS recipient to apply for a waiver which would allow certain providers who are convicted of certain crimes to be to obtain provider status. Someone who would otherwise be excluded from being a provider, the recipient would have the right to apply for an exemption. It doesn't apply to a lot of crimes. It only applies to some. And we wanted to oppose this bill because we did think that at the core, a recipient should have the right to apply for a waiver, because recipients often know what's best for them. This doesn't mean they'll get the waiver. There are very stringent procedures in place for the department to look at it and to say, no, this person's just a really bad apple. We're not going to give you the waiver. And that's the way it should be. Recipients don't always do the right thing. But on the other hand, consumers should have the right to at least, you know, take a look at it for their own provider. So we opposed the bill, and it was defeated. So there's one that we won. Okay. SB 1298, this is a bill which I'm only going to talk briefly about because we're going to be debating it on Sunday, probably. We're going to have a resolution to come before you. It is a bill to allow the testing and operation of autonomous vehicles. Autonomous vehicles drive themselves on the roads. That doesn't mean they won't have a licensed driver in them necessarily, but it does mean they will be able to and will be driving without the driver driving them, or the operator, or whatever you're going to call the person in the car driving them. So it's a very complicated bill. I don't want to take up too much time. We're going to have a while in resolution, so I encourage people to come tonight if they want and to listen to our debate, and I'm sure we'll have an interesting debate Sunday. It's certainly technology that has a lot of potential for our population down the road. It's also technology that is, you know, like any innovation, it's fraught with difficulties. And so I think it's really worth our giving it very judicious consideration. I've already talked to we had discussed this briefly in our committee. I went in and had a discussion with the aide, you know, telling the author's office, Mr. Padilla's aide, that, you know, we're obviously not ready to commit to anything yet. We had to come to this convention and decide what we wanted to do, but we had a frank discussion of some of the concerns. And so hopefully this Sunday we can have an interesting debate about that particular bill. Yeah, yes, Kathy. Senator Padilla. Senator Padilla. Mainly, and it's there's several, but mainly it's Google, because Google has a fleet of 8 of these cars. This emanates out of Mr. Thrun, who you might remember was the Stanford researcher that spoke to us a few years ago. It's his research, and he has apparently, I don't know, I don't think he's specifically associated with Google, but his research led to what Google's current technology is that they put in these cars. They're not the only people that have them, but they're apparently the biggest player at this point in time. And so that's really where a lot of the impetus is coming. There was a big video that came out about I think he's the head of the Santa Clara Valley Blind Center, I believe, who was riding in one of these, gotten a lot of publicity.
Please, everyone.
So, yeah, that's where it is.
Can we hold the questions after Jeff's report, please?
Okay. Wait a minute. First, I want to see whether Donna wants people to ask questions right in the middle of things. I'm going to ask the president what her... Or Gene. Gene, you're the presiding officer. What do you want done here with this? Do you want questions to wait?
I'd rather the questions to wait, and then we can get the mics to people so they can be recorded, and everyone's question can be heard and get a response.
Okay. Thank you.
For all questions. Right now, in a few minutes.
Wait till I finish the report, and then we'll try to get any time Gene has for questions. I'll certainly try to answer whatever I can. Okay. Roadside rests. This was we have a couple things in the roadside rest area topic. We did have a resolution at our last convention about a concern that Caltrans was going to begin to again enforce state statute regarding collection of utilities by blind vendors who operate roadside rest area vending machines. They did hear our concerns, and I think it was very important that we did that resolution. It ended up where we were at the table with vendors. They had a lengthy meeting at which I participated, and Roy Harmon participated, and a number of vendors who are not affiliated with, our organization, and where the Caltrans was provided with a great deal of information. I think we were really giving a balanced view of things to help out our vendors. At this point in time, we don't know yet what kind of a proposal Caltrans will come back with. It is a situation where if the amount that they attempt to collect for utilities is too high, it could really put into jeopardy, vendors' businesses in certain situations. And if not, it could be it could work out, fairly well. So we really don't know yet what they will propose, and we'll have to decide at that point in talking with the vendors what their reaction is going to be. So that's we've really done what we could. We got the legislature's nose about it. We worked with the Department of Rehabilitation, who helped to organize the meeting, and we have done what we can for the moment. So stay tuned on that issue. However, now we have another roadside rest area challenge ahead of us, and that is AB 2485 by a San Diego legislator named Huso. And this bill would allow Caltrans to enter into agreements with private entities to operate rest areas that would include retail establishments. And then the state would get a cut. So this could really put an end to the expansion of, vendor opportunities. And even more, it could put the small businesses that operate alongside those vending machines, your truck stops and other little things, other little businesses, it could put them out of businesses, because you're going to see the big boys get in there, and it's not just going to affect the blind vendors, it's going to affect the small businesses. And that was one of the elements, I think, that affected the last time. They've tried this before, 4 years ago, and Dan Kaiser was here to help, squelch that out. And so that bill is up on the 24th of the month. I will get out the information, and again, I will get it out so that folks can phone in as well. And that's going to be heard in the Assembly Transportation Committee. I know the vendors are obviously very concerned, and we will work with them on that issue. Okay, I don't know how much time I have left, and I don't want to go over here. But let me cover a couple more issues that we have worked on. One I covered this morning in the library group, but I want to cover it for everyone, and that is that we have another threat to the federal funding that funds the Braille and Talking Book Library in Sacramento. What happened, and I'll try to be brief on this, but basically last year there was money that the governor took out of the budget that funded some library programs, not our program, but other library programs. However, that money is the money that gets used to get our matching federal money that operates the Braille and Talking Book Library. Now, it won't have an effect for a couple of years is what we understand. But the current budget, again, would keep that money out of the budget. The current governor's proposal would, again, not put that money in the budget. And if it happens again this year, we can be in deep jeopardy of having no matching funds within the next 1 to 2 years for library services. So we have a hearing on the 19th in the Senate. At least it's currently on the 19th. Sometimes they change. The Senate Budget Subcommittee, and in early May in the Assembly, and I will be getting information out. I've already sent some out, and I'll get more out in terms of members to contact. We will be having testimony. I strongly encourage everybody that's going to be in Sacramento to come and testify. I really have to say that last year, I'm going to toot my own chapter's horn, we had a tremendous group that testified last year, and we won. But the governor zeroed the money out, even though the legislature kept it in. So we lost that particular war after winning the battle. However, we are going to try and, you know, overcome some long odds, and, you know, we're going to continue to work on this particular problem. One thing I intend to do this summer, hopefully, I know it's my understanding that we're going to hopefully hear from the new NLS commissioner, and I'm going to hope to try and, you know, get together with her if there's a moment and see what she can tell us about, you know, how we can maintain our federal funding, because this is an area that not many of us know much about. You know, there's a lot of obscure federal laws out there, and in terms of getting the matching money for our libraries is an area that I, for one, don't know much about, and not many people seem to. So I want to learn some more, and we're going to keep fighting as hard as we can, and I know how important it is to all of you. Community college funding. We've already testified once on that in the Senate. They want to block grant most of the community college funds, which would allow all the disabled student service program funds to be used for anything, whether it's, you know, the computer lab money, the reader money, the note taker money. They could all be basically taken for all sorts of purposes. We testified against that a few days ago, along with others in the disability community and in our community, and we'll continue to work on that issue. CSB, California School for the Blind, as Stuart said today, we were there twice testifying on that issue in terms of making budget cuts. And we, you know, I don't think we're going to get, you know, by without some sort of a cut, but I do think we've made a real impression as to the importance of the programs, including the summer school program. People like Twan that testified and people like Robin Patchy that went in and testified about what the school has done for her. They make a real impression. And so, again, we have done a lot, but we have more to do. How are we running on time, Gene?
You need to wrap it up so we can do questions.
Okay. Let me wrap up. There's so many other issues. You know, there's a lot of managed care sorts of issues that we touched on today so that I won't go over them. And with that, we'll work on doing more telephonic reports and as well as getting emails material out. And with that, I'm ready, open for questions.
If people would wait until the mic gets to them so it can be recorded and everyone can hear them, please. Yes, and identify yourself.
Thank you. It's Rick Plath out of Burbank, Glendale Burbank Area Chapter. My point is, I'm in favor of that bill where the cars could propel themselves. I'm just wondering, is there anybody that has stood up who has major objections to it? We know what the pros are, obviously, but I would like to know what the cons are, or one major con, and who is actually opposing it.
Well, there's different areas of opposition, some of which might be ours that haven't been mentioned, such as the fact that, and it will come out Sunday, I think, the fact that several of the Google cars are Priuses, and that, you know, gives us sort of a problem. Another group that's currently opposing it, and they may be able to work it out, are the automotive manufacturers, because they're concerned that the way the bill is written may not totally free them from potential liability, even though they are not the ones who are actually manufacturing the technology and putting it in the car. So there are some concerns from their perspective. There, you know, it's interesting because a lot of cars today actually have components of that technology in there. They have sensors to do certain things, but they don't have the full-on autonomous vehicle technology. And the auto dealers are concerned that they don't want to be on the hook for liability if someone goes in and sticks that technology into their car and then they operate it. And I guess it's not all that difficult to do, or so it's asserted. I'm you know, a little bit at sea myself. But anyway, so those are some of the areas that people have discussed. I'm not really sure where the insurance companies have come out on this yet. It's going to go to the insurance committee next, and so we might hear more. So I don't know if that answers your question, Rick.
Jeff, Mitch Pomerantz.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go back to the Gaines Bill, 1879. There is already an effort, I believe a private consultant, I don't recall who's paying them, but there is already an effort, and I think they're close to done. They have taken and compared the ADA with Title 24. So I'm not quite sure I understand the point of the Gaines bill when what she's calling for is almost been completed.
Well, actually, I didn't go into too much detail in my testimony, although I will with the Assemblywoman office, but I made the point that there were a couple of efforts going on right now. But I think we are going to have to, you know, convince the Assembly leadership a little bit more that that's the case, because at that point in time, they were just willing to pass the bill on through. But, Mitch, I totally get your point, and I tried to make it.
Yeah, it's already being done.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one else is standing.
Okay, I want to thank you very much, and keep advocating.
Thank you, Jeff. Our next report's ACB report, and we're very fortunate to have from our national board, Marlena Lieber, who is from Washington State and the secretary of ACB. And I'd like to turn it over. Do you have a microphone?
I do.
Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone. And I want to thank you for being here. And I want to thank you for inviting me. And I want to bring greetings to you from the entire board of directors of the American Council of the Blind, which is the board is located all over the place, and from the entire staff of the American Council of the Blind, whose offices are located in Arlington, Virginia. Now, I'm going to be brief because right now I'm smart enough to know that all that stands between you and hospitality is the president's report, and all that stands between the president's report and you is me. So, therefore, I'm going to be brief and hopefully we'll have time for questions. And if not, I will be in the hospitality room, and if I haven't met you, please help me to do that. I really believe that when I come out and visit these wonderful ACB affiliates, I come because I've been invited, and I come because I want to meet you. So if I don't know you yet, there's one of me and a bunch of you, so do find me. that's my challenge to you. I want to, since Jeff's been talking about legislation, and wow, holy cow, am I impressed with what you guys are doing in California on your legislative agenda. I mean, I am just energized sitting here listening to all that you've been doing. Congratulations. You guys, give yourselves a round of applause. Oh, come on, a big one, a big one. CCB is a really vital and wonderful affiliate, and you guys shouldn't forget that for one second. On the national level, I want to share with you that we've gotten, we being ACB, has gotten the prescription drug labeling bill introduced. It has 7 co-sponsors now. The bill number is HR 4087. And I won't go into a lot of details on the bill, but essentially it's what it says. It is a bill that will require that blind people have access to their prescription drug labels. What a concept, right? In this year of 2012, what a concept. Imagine, that's right. It is about frickin' time, as she said. So you can help. You can absolutely help. This isn't something that that Eric Bridges does in Washington and that, you know, Mitch Pomerantz does as the national president. No, no, no. The American Council of the Blind is a grassroots organization, and that means you, and it means me, and it means that we get on the phone to our congresspeople in Washington and we tell them we want you to sign on to HR 4087. HR 4087. Okay, that's real important. We gotta know what kind of medicines we're taking. Accessible currency, remember that? Remember that suit we won? Woohoo! Well, we're moving along with that. Bills are recycled or have a life cycle, or they change them about every 10 to 14 years, I think, is what I remember. And so sometime between 2014 and 2017, you will see your first tactile bill. And I want to be there to spend it right along with you guys. And again, the staff and the people who work with the legislation are really working hard on this, and I know that Mitch spends a lot of time on the phone talking with the attorneys about this and really keeps his eye on this extremely important victory that we achieved. So start looking out, you know, in the scope of time, 2014 is just a blink of the eye away. So it's coming, and it's going to be real. ACB participates in a coalition on something called durable medical equipment. And that's, you know, the kinds of things that we need to survive as blind people, low vision aids, perhaps even reading equipment, etc. And there's a coalition of organizations working with blind folks that is working on establishing the parameters for what we will ask to have introduced as legislation in 2013 regarding a pilot program that we want offered by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And this legislation will contain the parameters of how we want to see that program run. And we know, and we all know in this room, that there are inequities with the kinds of things that people who are blind can qualify for and can get with Medicare and Medicaid. We've been talking about it for years, and now the process has begun to address and begin to remove those inequities. Yeah, let's hear it for that coalition. I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming convention. How many people are going to Louisville? All right. Mitch, did you clap? We're not sure if Mitch is going yet, but I'll make sure he's there, because if he's not, then he would have to listen to me on ACB radio all week, and that would just drive him crazy. Oh, said he'd go. So the conference and convention is in Louisville, Kentucky, where they have the best daggone derby pie in the world. Bourbon. I don't drink bourbon, so I can't tell you about that. July 6th to July 14th. And if you want to make a reservation, you can call 1-800-THE-GALT, 843-4258, because it's at the Galt House in Louisville, Kentucky. I need to apologize for my voice. Like everybody else, I don't know what in the last 24 hours, but allergies are just making me nuts, so please forgive me. somebody said we know. On the Friday of convention week, we're doing something interesting this year. It's the Leadership Training Institute. And we are hoping that that affiliates will be able to send a person to the Leadership Training Institute. It's going to occur all day long on Friday. And you should watch the forum for more information on that. You'll be given instructions on what to do and how to send people and so forth. This morning we talked a bit about the CVAA, the Communications and Video Accessibility Act. And one of the things that I regretfully reported to you this morning is that one of the trade associations from industry has submitted a request to the FCC for a waiver giving them till 2017 to comply with the CVAA, because somehow industry just thinks the technology isn't there yet. Well, we are going to have at our convention Mr. Richard Orm from the RNIB, and he is coming with not one, not two, but three accessible set-top boxes, which are in use by Britons right now. We've also read some of us a lot about Panasonic UK. They've got like two or three talking TV sets out. So I'm pulling two things together here to say to you that come and hear Richard Orm speak, and be on the lookout for when you are asked to comment on the CVAA when it comes up for its second round of comments, because it is just bunko, bunko, bunko that we don't have the technology now to do this. And blind people need to speak up, because if we don't do it now, we'll lose. So Mr. Orm will be giving two presentations. One will be at the general session, and I don't know which day, but it will be during general session. Wednesday, that's the day, that's my day. Oh, good. Oh, good. I shall introduce him. And the other will be as part of some of the presentations that the Information Access Committee is offering, and I think that's going to be Tuesday afternoon, but I'm not 100%. Oh, same day. Same day. See, I told you you should get up here and do this, Mitch. Yeah. He's got all the good stuff. So Wednesday is going to be a great day at the conference and convention, because we need to get all the information we can get, learn all we can learn to stand up to industry and say, no, you're not doing this to us again. Someone else who will be joining us in Louisville, someone whom I have met once and thoroughly enjoyed, is the new NLS director, Karen Kenninger. She's a delightful person and has a lot of personality and a lot of interest. And by God, isn't it amazing? NLS, National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, has a director who is blind. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? What a concept. God, that and accessible prescription labels all in one night. Can our hearts stand it? I don't know. Our international guest is a gentleman who will likely be the next president of the World Blind Union. His name is Arnt Holt, and he's from Norway. Yeah, sure, you betcha. And if we're lucky, he won't bring lutefisk or akevitt. Now, only the Norwegians probably know what that is, and I'm married to one, and trust me, you don't want to know. You don't even want to try it. Our banquet speaker, this I can't wait for. Our banquet speaker is going to be Michael Hudson, and he is going to talk about the history of the Kentucky School for the Blind. And Mitch tells me that the Kentucky School for the Blind had some involvement in the Civil War, that the facility was actually used, I think, as an infirmary. So this could be really interesting. So I'm really looking forward to that. The Department of the Treasury is coming back yet again to have us look at prototypes of their tactile bills. So while they won't be doing a presentation, they will be there. And folks, we need to keep talking to them. And we need to keep really stressing that, these interim things are okay. We won't necessarily tell them that their iPhone app was pretty bad. But it's tactility that we want. We want those tactile bills and tactility. Yes. Yes. Yeah. See, that's the new word. And another cool thing that's going to happen that I hope I get to see is that our esteemed president, Pomerantz is going to throw out the first ball at the Louisville Bats game. Now, I want to make sure I'm not standing in the way when a blind man throws that ball out, but other than that, I really, no heckling. Hey, no heckling me from the audience. This is my show. You be quiet. So I think that's great, and it should also bring in a lot of wonderful publicity for ACB as well. Our website is continuing to evolve. I don't know if y'all have been on there lately to see it, but it's really moving. It's changing, and we hear from people with low and no vision that it's working out a lot better. I very briefly want to tell you, in terms of the Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and I said this morning, but I will say it again and again and again, that the American Council of the Blind was the only blind consumer organization involved with the FCC Advisory Committee to help develop the suggested implementations and regulations for that act. We were the only ones. What's that chant? Oh, I don't know, Mark. Maybe Mark's listening. Hey, Mark, are you listening? Where were you? We wonder about that. Yeah. So, and there were three. That's funny. Where was Mark? And there were. Sometimes I get carried away when I do this, kids. I'm sorry. So, there were three groups that primarily worked with blindness issues. The first was the group that I was on, which sort of dealt with the, as I said this morning, non-sexy, boring things of pass-through. How are you going to pass it through? And what you're going to say, do you want to say, now she comes into the room, or do you want to say, she comes into the room? You know, that was real exciting. But people who co-chaired that group was a gentleman from Comcast and Paul Schrader from the American Foundation for the Blind. The next group dealt with we knew him first, Bernice says. The next group dealt with how do we deal with emergency communications? What is an emergency? You know, is a school closing an emergency? Is a snowstorm an emergency? How do we deal with it? What happens, etc. That group was chaired by a gentleman from the broadcast industry and our own Melanie Brunson. The fourth, actually, it was group four, but group one dealt with captioning. So we sort of always start with group two, and people say, wait, that's only three, and you said four. But group four dealt with user interfaces. It's been a long day. User interfaces. And on that group was your own Louis Herrera, who did a fabulous job representing blind people. And it was co-chaired by a gentleman from industry and ACB's own Brian Charlson. So ACB absolutely has its footprint in the CVAA. And so when we come to you for help, please, please respond. A lot of work's been put into this, and there's a lot more to be done, but we are on the road, and we are on the roadmap. The Pedestrian Safety Handbook is on the web. It's a living document, and it will evolve and change as technologies evolve and change. Please download it. Please go have a look at it. Please use it to increase the pedestrian safety for yourself and every other blind or visually impaired person who crosses the street in your community. And one of the people who worked on that was your own first vice president, Jean Lozano. And finally, because I said I would be brief and I wasn't, and you're all going to hate me and you have to listen to me again tomorrow night, so I'm going to run before you throw the tomatoes. But I want you to know you're going to get the scoop. Ready? 2014, who's going to play blackjack with me in Las Vegas at the 2014 ACB convention? All right. You heard it here first, folks. In any case, I want to thank you all so much for having me, and I love to come to CCB, and I will be in hospitality. Please come and meet me, and let's get to know each other, and I'll be talking to you tomorrow night. Thanks so much, and have a good one.
Thank you, Marlena. Very excellent report. Just before we have our presidential report, let's have another door prize. See people still here.
I've always wanted to win a door. Oh, I have a Labrador.
Silicon Valley is giving us two dark chocolate candy bars and a $25 check.
Oh, sure.
Anthony Cigarello, are you in the room? Are you here?
Yay! I drew your name, Anthony.
I'm certain Anthony's going to have several new friends. Okay. Yes.
He is here, he has new friends.
If he accepts them. Oh, I'm getting punchy. It's going to be a long night. Resolutions hasn't even started.
It's going to be fun.
Neither is hospitality.
I'll meet you there. Okay. We are almost at the very end. But to conclude everything, here is our president, Donna Pomerantz, to give the presidential report. Let's give her a hand.
Thank you, everyone. Well, I am going to condense this a bit because I do realize the time. And I'd like to start off by reminding all of you about our theme. Our convention theme is CCB, Endless Possibilities, Endless Opportunities. When you come to CCB, whatever it is you choose to do, you never know where we're going to go once we get moving forward together. First, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for your support within the last 6 months or so. Everyone in the CCB family knows that myself and Mitch have been through a great deal. And I am very, very happy that we are having a wonderful, wonderful time together here at the convention. Much better for myself and Mitch than we had in the fall. And Mitch is doing very well. He's here, as you can hear, in every session. He's back. So thanks to all of you for your support. We truly are the CCB family. Thank you. We're working on a number of things in this year. And first of all, CCB is pleased to announce, and I'm very, very proud of this, CCB is pleased to announce the establishment of a social security advocacy team. Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That is a wonderful thing. We have several members of this team. We have realized that there has been a large need here within the membership. And who better than members of our own family to assist in navigating the waters of the Social Security Administration? We've recognized that there was a need, and there were several cases that the team worked on. The first case, an SSI recipient received a notice of a large overpayment. The team counseled the person as to the points to bring out in appealing the overpayment. And the entire overpayment was waived. Now, the sad thing about this was that the person came to the group a bit late. If they would have come to the group earlier, the process would have been able to help so that the person didn't need to diminish their assets. So that's one very successful case. The second case that the group worked on was dealing with a person who stopped working. And the group assumed that they had applied and were receiving Social Security disability benefits. It was about 3 years later when the person was asked directly if they had applied for benefits, and the answer was no. It took a few months before the group assisted in getting the application filled out over the telephone, and it took approximately 7 months for the application to be processed, and it was approved ultimately. Yes, that is something to clap about. The person is now receiving ongoing monthly Social Security benefits. However, they missed out on approximately $30,000 in benefits if they would have applied right after they stopped working. Case number three. This newly legally blind person applied for Social Security disability benefits, and this person was denied. The person was pretty much ready to drop the matter and maybe apply later. But the group counseled the person to appeal. It took time, it took perseverance on the person's part, on the group's part, to go through that appeal. They made them jump through many, many hoops. However, this case was won in the person's favor. And the person also received the retroactive money and is now receiving ongoing monthly Social Security disability benefits. So this is some of the work that this team has begun to do, and this is a service that is coming and is here in the CCB family. So this is one thing. Now, this definitely will take a lot of work, and this group will take cases on a case-by-case basis. So this is another wonderful service offered by the CCB family. I want to let you know that we, CCB, our office lease is up in July, the end of July. And the CCB office, which is in Sacramento right now, will be moving a few blocks down, still on J Street, in Sacramento. The CCB office will be moving to a place that, in the agreement, we were also able to negotiate, and the office is fully furnished and fully decorated, and we're able to rent that office, and it will be ours. So that is news on the location of the CCB office. We'll be moving again. The lease ends the end of July. Now, to talk a little bit about some of our cases. We know that we've been doing work in the JetBlue case. The JetBlue case is still on appeal, and we're waiting for an outcome of this appeal. The outcome of the appeal in the NFB's kiosk access case against United Airlines. We're waiting for that decision. So we probably won't know the outcome of this case for at least another year or so. Raley's. CCB and individual claimants will be testing a prototype machine in West Sacramento within the next month or so. And then there will be some testing done in Merced. So that is continuing to move forward. Marlena already talked about MLB, so I will go ahead and skip that one. If you, let's see, our next case, this is a biggie, I think, although they all are. It's wonderful we're able to negotiate. Kaiser has agreed to enter structured negotiations to address issues for patients and visitors with visual impairments. Yes. Yes. That is hot off the presses. And it's absolutely a wonderful thing for all of us. CCB is also working on negotiations with several pharmacies regarding accessible prescription solutions as well as some alternate format solutions. As you can see, this is a brief summary of some of the things that have been continuing to move forward since I came before you last. I'd like to close on this note. And, you know, Linda Dardarian said this at our president's meeting. And I truly believe this with my heart and soul. I am a person who believes in choice. Choice is my mantra. Choice is what the California Council of the Blind advocates for on a daily basis. We are entitled to choices. The same thing does not always work for each and every one of us in the same way. Again, therefore, choices. And I just want you to remember that throughout the rest of this convention, as I shared, I condensed my report, realizing time. But through the rest of the convention, come and talk to me and ask me questions. If you have questions about anything, I'm here to answer them. And know that, you know, you can definitely touch base with me this weekend. I am very, very pleased and very honored to be your president. Things may not always be easy. We definitely, and I make no secret of it, are in difficult times. But we're also sprouting new growth in different places within CCB. And I know that things can begin to turn around for all of us within CCB if we continue to come together and, yes, sometimes make some very difficult decisions together. But remember, the difficulties are temporary. Sometimes you need to replant. Sometimes you need to feed the ground, which is what we are doing, so that you can get that strong, new, healthy, vibrant growth and stability. And we can do it as long as we all continue to do it together. I'm here for you. I need to know from you what you would like from me. And remember, in CCB, we have endless possibilities and endless opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam President. Are there any announcements anyone would like to make before we entertain? Yes. Yes, Pam.
Could I just remind about the nominating?
Yeah, please get on the mic, okay? Do you have one there?
Yes. This is Pam Polgy. I'm also the chairperson of the nominating committee, so I want to remind you nominating representatives to please join me right after this adjournment in the Bayside One Room. Thank you. Bayside One Room, because we have to lock the door 15 minutes after that, so don't be late or you'll be excluded. I don't want you to be excluded, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Pam. Any other announcements? Okay, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. Okay, we're adjourned to tomorrow morning. Tomorrow afternoon, rather.
Hi, Pedro.